Welcome back to the Film Experience. This is your host, Nathaniel, and I'm here with Nick Davis, finally returned.
Actually, my name is Bryce Dallas Howard, and every time there's like a toxic, flat dimension to my character, I play right into it.
Good for you.
That's what I'm good at.
Oh, so I guess, does that mean you want to talk about Jurassic World?
Not that much.
No, I think we gave it the same grade.
Okay, yeah, and that was, I hadn't been in a theater. I think I'd been in the movies like twice in like 6 or 7 weeks or something when I saw that, so I could not have been better positioned to be like, yes, just give me a Velociraptor. I would take anything right now.
So maybe you were being generous.
Yeah, like a C seems high. I don't know.
But we need to talk about your 6 or 7 weeks without going to the movie theater. That's not, the Surgeon General does not recommend that.
Total, the RDA daily allowance was like completely not met. Yeah. Graduation season, it's crazy.
So were you totally like emaciated and dehydrated by the time you took that
in? I was. I had an IV and everything.
So how long did you stay in the movie theater once you got back?
I did 5 double features in a row, like Monday through Friday, right after graduation.
So I hope they were more successful than Jurassic World.
Well, it's like you were saying, I think, in one of your comment sections the other day about how, like, you know, even a movie that you didn't really like, you're so glad you know, we're just always so happy to go. So, yeah.
The men who loved movies too much. Oh, yeah. The SmackDown.
It was the SmackDown, that's right, yeah.
Because I remember Mama was just a painful movie, and then afterwards I was thinking about all the parts I liked, and I'm like, I have a problem, because even if I hate a movie, I'm, like, totally into the fact that I saw it.
You know, some people use their human relationships to work out these impulses, and it's good we just do it through movies. Like, I actually like everybody I like. You know, that's good.
I know you weren't doing the SmackDown, but did you actually play along at all, or did you have no time?
I had seen all 5 of those before, and I realized you guys were going to have, like, a tough climb because there was no obvious, like, great performance. I don't really like Key Largo that much, although I don't remember it very well. And I remember thinking she was just like a whole lot on top of a lot. So I think I was like an Ellen Corby voter, but sort of by default.
Okay. Yeah. It was funny how some years are like that and other years are just an embarrassment of riches. And you are one of the panelists we can announce for our next SmackDown 1995.
Yay!
And I think it's going to be really exciting because the performances are very much worth talking about.
I know. I watched 2 of the movies yesterday and, whatever, to be continued. But the last one was like what you were saying about Gene Simmons especially. I agreed with, like, for all 5 nominees, like, everything everybody said that was nice about them made total sense to me, and every criticism made total sense to me. Like, mm-hmm. So, good SmackDown.
Okay. I'm glad that you at least got a chance to read if you couldn't rewatch anything.
Yeah.
So, to be continued at the end of July, the last Sunday in July, the podcast will be devoted to 1995. And since it's a year we all lived through cinematically, I'm sure we'll have a lot to discuss even beyond those 5 women.
Yeah. I had How to Make an American Quilt on last night, just as a general, like, votive offering to supporting actresses. And it's so much even worse than I remember. Oh, my God. And how can it be with all those ladies? Whatever.
Yeah, I don't remember that very much, except for that there's something with, like, a crushed glass mosaic or something.
Yeah. And from all the ceramics that Anne Bancroft has thrown at her cheating husband, she eventually makes a wall mosaic out of it.
Oh, okay. I didn't even remember what context, but I remembered a wall mosaic and Jonathan Shake's body.
Yep.
Those are my 2 memories of that movie.
Yep. There you go.
He was born too early because he missed the Mad Max era. Or Mad Max, oh my God. Faux pas.
well, either
the
one.
The Magic Mike era of men displaying themselves.
Although, thank goodness. I mean, maybe there's, like, buried talent there we've never been exposed to. But I didn't watch either Magic Mike and think, what if Jonathan Shake were in this? That would be... He'd really bring something.
So I guess we should talk about Magic Mike then.
Yeah.
Since we've segued right into it unintentionally. So I don't know where you are with this, except for that you thought Jada Pinkett Smith was really good, and I had the opposite reaction.
I know, I read your review and I saw that.
But that's the only thing I know, and she's not really the focus of the movie.
Except, as you point out, when she suddenly is.
Yes, twice.
But did you. I realized you were. I took that mostly as a structural point that you were just flummoxed that she
Yes.
suddenly becomes so central at the moment she does, but did you also not like her in it?
No, it was more of a structural screenplay thing. Like, it seemed extremely unwise to have like a character that we have no connection to be like the focal point of both the middle and the ending of the movie.
Yeah.
Because it just didn't make sense to me, like. And also, I sort of love the idea of Mike's type being these sort of like pissy blonde girls who judge him.
Yeah.
I really like that through line because it's so unexpected.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really fit into that at all. Even
Yeah.
though I liked the idea that she was kind of like a Svengali for him and there was a sexual component as well. I thought that was interesting. Like, I liked everything about her in the middle of the movie.
Maybe he left her because he was like, "You need to be more like Cody Horn. Like, I can't hang around for this. Be blonde. Be totally over it."
But anyway, I was a little bit sad watching it that I knew it was the end because it seemed to me like the type of franchise, like Pitch Perfect, where if you didn't make it so much about these exact people and it was more rotating cast, you could keep making money forever. And Lord knows there are enough franchises that do that have no reason to. That.
Totally.
Anyway.
Maybe it'll be like we'll get the Expendables Magic Mike in like 35 years. And
Oh, God forbid.
one more tour to Jacksonville.
So yeah, I had some structural problems with it, but I loved the first half. I thought it was really funny and I loved how like loose it felt. I realize that's why people don't like it in some ways. They think it's, like lazy.
Well, I sort of admire. I mean, well, one thing to say is that we again like are at odds because I t took me like an hour to get into it, and then I liked the second half better. But I do really admire about it that the structure is so just kind of awkward or willing to go into these long lulls and then peak at strange moments. Like I do like that the movie's not really interested in pandering to its audience, even its. Our sense of like what a shape of a movie should be in a way.
Right.
Like I didn't always love experiencing that, but I thought it was risky. And I did like that that meant that all the moments of excitement or titillation or whatever were contextualized by the fact that mostly these are people who sit around and shoot the shit or try to just fill the day or not fill the day or.
Yeah. Definitely. And I like the sort of the friction between those two modes.
Yeah.
And I love the weird touches, like the girl in the motel room with the helmet on. Like, there's a lot of like, she reminded me a little bit of the flame throwing guitar player in Fury Road. Just somebody that you just remember, that you just love is there, even though what the hell?
What the hell? Yeah, totally.
I think more movies need to just like be alive in those idiosyncratic ways.
Yeah, and that was sort of the feeling that I had by the end of this one. Like, even the things that I hadn't liked, I think that's why I left the theater being so much more into it than I necessarily was at many moments during it, was just that I was happy to have experienced something so idiosyncratic. Even though I felt like there were kind of just of too many scenes that, like, the gay bar scene seemed really awkward to me. Like the only scene where the movie sort of is giggling that it is somewhere, and like, just everybody getting on stage, like, we don't know, I don't know, like, give it to the big guy, and then suddenly we're just gone. I mean, I've liked what you said about I mean, I hadn't thought of the like Mike having a type, so like. Even from your review and from now, that's been really interesting. But the actual relationship dynamic between him and her seemed so baffling to me. And I was way less into having her, like, I think I reacted a little bit to her the way you did to Jada Pinkett Smith.
Okay.
I don't know more about her. She doesn't need to be here right now. Right. Go to New York.
And were you a fan of Andie MacDowell? Because that's the only question that matters.
I was.
Yeah, she was really fun in it.
She gave an amazing line reading to Damn. Yeah, I thought she was totally fun. I kind of wish she had popped back up at the end. But, you know, what are you going to do? I guess she gave away her car.
Yeah. But Big Dick Ritchie did say he was going to return it. So I was sort of, I'm like, if you're going to be this shambly as a movie, why not The Road Trip back?
Why not? Just, yeah. Yeah, you probably, this is not the audience is going to be like, wait, but how would she have gotten here?
Like, anyway. So, but speaking of idiosyncratic, and We Wish More movies that were that way, I think this is an unnatural segue to Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which I'm sort of dying to discuss because I did not see it at Sundance and only just saw it.
Oh, okay, me too.
And it is so the opposite way where all the idiosyncrasies are feel like, I'm going to be quirky.
Totally.
But, and I didn't, like, I didn't want to hate it.
Yeah.
But I was sitting in the movie theater because some of it felt heartfelt, but it also was inauthentic at the same time. Like, I couldn't figure out what possessed them to make it. Like, that was my problem with it. Like, what is, you know, what am I supposed to take away from this?
I agree with you 100%.
And the fact that it was such a huge hit at Sundance.
Which it kind of hasn't been post-Sundance, right?
Well, it hasn't done, I don't think it's done terribly for itself. I mean, a lot of Sundance things, like in the real world, they, you know, feel right. Much different.
But, like, I remember when Con happened, that even the fact that, like, Dope got picked up for Con, but this one didn't, despite the two prizes. And
right.
It seems to have, yeah.
I mean, it's made $3 million in release, which isn't bad for...
It's nothing to sneeze at, yeah.
Right, for a little indie.
Especially a little indie whose title is like, this girl's gonna die.
And spoiler alert...
Yeah.
The movie keeps telling you that she isn't going to die, which also really, really turned me off.
Yeah.
I just, like, I found that really offensive, actually.
I found everything about that character completely off-putting, and, like...
About the dying girl?
No, about him, sorry.
Oh, right, okay.
Like...
About me. Yeah. The me of the title.
I've been waiting for a podcast where I could tell you, Nathaniel, but yeah, about the me character. Yeah, like, and I understand that the people who have real ardor for the film are really focused on the fact that it's a critique of him and that all the weird shit the movie's doing is kind of showing you his self-involvement, mm-hmm. which I get. Like, that seems like, why else would you have... Did you react as badly as I did to all the horribly, like, fisheye photography and, like, really weird camera movements and...
Yeah, I just, like I said, I just didn't really understand what possessed, like, a lot of the decisions about the movie. And even, like, so the intense close-ups, like, I get it that that's, you know, a crutch a lot of filmmakers use now because it reads well on TV and phones and things.
Yeah.
But... I also didn't really even when I liked seeing the close-ups, I didn't really understand why they were there. Like, there's this pretty greatly acted close-up of Connie Britton, who's one of my favorite television actresses. And so and it's her reaction to her son going to prom or something. I can't even remember when it comes in the movie.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't understand, like, her part is so sidelined.
Yes.
It seems like such a generous close-up to give this character that we know nothing about.
Yeah, I felt like it just seemed at sixes and sevens a lot. And even things that looked like they had been worked out as strategies, like, we will show you that this is a kind of, he's in his own fishbowl mentally that he never gets out of, and so we will have shots be like fishbowls. But it just felt awkward and arbitrary, and as... annoyingly affected as he was. And I didn't like him when he was earnest. I didn't like him when he was facetious. Like, we are not two people who demand to like characters in movies, but it really cost that one something that I wanted to get away from him as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and then I guess what really bothered me of it, if it is a critique of him,
yeah.
which some fans think, then why is the whole trajectory of the movie about sure, let this girl die because then the man can have his development and character arc and he can be lauded for, like, he's going to grow up and she really believes in him. It just felt like a really offensive example of what is wrong with how Hollywood, I know this isn't indie, but how Hollywood views men and women and protagonism, you know?
Yeah. And as moved as I was, to my great surprise, by the scene I won't ruin because it was a nice surprise of kind of when he finds out how she's been spending her time. I mean, it's a weird sequence, but it did kind of get me. But yeah, I agree. Like, none of the arguments for, like, oh, the film's self-conscious about that. It knows that he appropriates her life and Earl's. Like, okay, great, you know. Like, self-knowledge doesn't solve every problem. Like, it doesn't seem like the movie has anything else to, like, I didn't get much from how he's co-opted their stories. I guess in the novel, I don't know how to say this for people who haven't seen the movie, but she has more to say about the movie that he shows her near
Oh,
the
okay.
end. Timings of things aren't exactly as, you know, as they were. I have no idea why you would change that. And even things with Earl, like, why saddle that character with all these, like, weird remarks about titties if it just seemed like it was kind of making big hurdles for that character to clear. Like, he was such an off-putting presence in some ways, who then had to, like, recover from that.
Yeah. And it didn't even make sense from a writing perspective because he constantly had this joke about objectifying women, and
Yes.
yet he's the one telling him to no, actually, like, view this girl as a real person. Like, what are you doing? She's awesome.
Right.
And I'm like, I didn't buy it at
At
all.
all. At all.
And, like,
It was like,
we're supposed to think that he's also become friends with her, but they have no screen time that doesn't involve. Like, I guess I just didn't buy
and
it,
she's
was my
like, I don't
problem.
really want friends right now, right? Like,
Yeah.
I'm sending even people away who are assiduously trying to be my friend. So, like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I had so many problems with it.
And, like, all the stuff with the movies that they make, like, I understand that some of those could be funny for, like, 3 seconds, but A, there's no way those movies are longer than, like, 3 seconds. And the idea that she would sit there and watch them. It wasn't even just like a narcissistic take on events that you could trust were happening. It was like, this obviously is not happening. This whole story is fraudulent. Like,
So if we were a movie review show, two thumbs down.
yeah, way down. Like, maybe my least favorite movie of the year so far.
Wow, okay. So what else should we've seen so many things now at the same time.
Did you say, since we're on Sundance, that you had just seen Dope also?
No, I saw Dope at Sundance.
You saw Dope at Sundance. Okay.
And
So I don't.
I liked it, but I had a lot of issues with, I mean, I think it has, like, great energy and individualism, which I really appreciate. Even though it's also self-consciously quirky, but it's self-consciously quirky in a way that felt authentic to me, for lack of a better word. And like, it felt like something that all those people might really be into, you know? Like, maybe the director has a 90s hip hop fetish, you know, like that sort of thing. And I thought it was really, really fun, but the pacing was, like, a huge problem for me. So, like, I liked it, but it felt like a first film to me. I don't know if it is a first film, but it felt
Well,
that
he
way to
made
me.
the Wood with Taye Diggs like 15 years ago, and then I'm sure has done all kinds of stuff in the medium, but I don't think he's put a movie out.
Oh,
So
okay.
feels like a first-time filmmaker, but isn't.
Okay, gotcha. So I mean, I enjoyed it and I would recommend it to people. But I just didn't like it felt rough to me. And so when they were doing the critic screenings here, I was like, "Hey, I'm happy to go again. You know, did they change anything?" 'Cause sometimes they do change things from Sundance because it was a typical, like, I read some reviews and that was it. The only complaint that I read more than once was about the pacing. So I thought they might have, but they said it wasn't, they didn't really change much. So I was like, okay, I'll pass on seeing it again just because I was busy, you know?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense too, that because I mean, what you said, like, that does feel like a movie that someone made it exactly to their tastes, which are peculiar.
Yeah.
You could feel that the movie believed in what it was doing, even though I couldn't always be there for it. But
yeah. So where did you land on it?
Well, I mean, I kind of between... I mean, the reason it came to mind was just that, like, this and all three of these movies seem like ones you would probably not show in a screenwriting lab for, like, how to structure a story, you know? But I was sort of in the middle on this one. I think I responded to the same kind of strange sincerity that you did, even though I could not make head or tail of, like, why it would take you an hour to set up the premise of... they're making dope in the school, and then really relate to it as though that is the premise. Like that was the drive. It wasn't just incidental. Like you thought this movie was about this, but it's actually about a bunch of other things. Like it didn't feel like it was about that many other things. It just took like there's a huge detour around Zoe Kravitz,
yeah,
that amounted to who knows what, and then the Roger Guinbeer Smith character becoming so important, the alumni interviewer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there were a lot of things that didn't work for me about it, but I liked its energy, which is a strange thing to say about something that I thought had huge pacing problems, but it's true.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
And, like, there are parts that were just laugh-out-loud funny, which is in rare supply often at the movies.
Yes.
Like, it's in the trailer, but within the context of the movie, I found that scene about Slippery Slope so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And then just a lot of, like, usually narration's a big turnoff for me, which is one of my problems with Me and Earl.
Uh-huh.
I'm already so in your head from the cinematography, I don't need you to also be in your head with your dialogue.
Right.
But this one, the narration is very, very funny.
Yeah. And even though I felt like it was kind of a desperate measure, the way it tries, the narration comes back in at the end to try to challenge you about the way you've been watching the movie. Like I wasn't sure it had totally earned that sense of kind of snidely talking down to us about what kind of viewer we've been or whatever, but it did make me rethink the movie a little bit. So yeah, I think we agree about this one.
Okay.
I'm curious what you think about Inside Out.
I loved it.
Yeah?
Like I was resistant going in because I was just exhausted by what I'd seen as the downward trajectory of Pixar.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I wasn't really in the mood for it, but it won me over.
Uh-huh.
There, I had several little issues, but it was one of those movies where, you know, I just felt like a curmudgeon for still having those issues after watching it because I found it so affecting.
Yeah.
And so funny. And so, like, and the central... a lot of times with children and family movies, the themes and the messaging that you get, I find depressingly conservative and or easy.
Yep.
But this one, it's actually fairly complicated, and I actually fairly much agree with it word for word about what the actual context of what they're trying to say to you is.
Yep.
So that took it a long way for me.
Yep.
And I love that they managed to make a story about something as abstract as your emotions will never be as pure and uncomplicated once you've grown up as they are before. I love that message, and I think it's like a really important message, and they actually found visual ways to say it.
Yeah.
So I loved it a lot. I still think it's super weird, the divisions of the emotions and... Some of the character designs I didn't completely love, but it affected me so much that I'm like, whatever.
I mean, it's another one that I thought had a really weird structure. It's kind of exciting that there's so many movies out right now that just don't feel like sort of three-act movies. Mm-hmm. Or I completely agree with you about the message of the movie, and I don't know, did you see it with an audience or with critics?
With critics.
Because I was at my audience, and I was talking to Joe the other day, and he had the same experience. Like, I guess he felt like the kids in his audience eventually started getting kind of restless, and the parents were clearly more into it. And I would not say that about my audience, even though it was like 6:15 p.m. So I was kind of surprised these 4 and 5 year olds were like hanging in there. But around halfway through, like, they started audibly asking their parents questions like, "Mommy, what is depression?" And like a little girl toward the end of the movie said to her parents, like, "Does this mean that she's always going to be sad her whole life?"
Like, oh, no.
Every trip home, it's going to be complicated today. So, like, I did sort of wonder if the parents know what they're getting into when they show up to this. Mm-hmm. But I really liked the broad message, too, and I thought the movie was really good at moment-to-moment kind of clever ways of visualizing something or kind of throwaways about, I mean, I can't even think of examples right now, but sort of one-offs about something about the psyche or whatever.
Oh, yeah. My favorite one-off, since you brought it up, I will just say when they're loading up a train or something and they tip over boxes of facts and opinions.
Yeah, totally.
And they're like, oh, they get confused all the time, you know. It just right. It's such like a joke that's never referenced again, but it was so funny.
Totally. Or I loved the they're just phone numbers. I mean, they're in her phone. You know what? She doesn't need these. There was a kind of, I guess, the middle ground between the overall messaging and the moment-to-moment cleverness. I felt a little shakier to me. Like, there was maybe just something sort of literal about... I'm both impressed in the ways that you said already that the movie manages to be about what it's about and come up with a way to do it. It sometimes seemed to... I think just the conception felt a little flat-footed to me. Just about the islands of your personality being so compartmentalized and your emotions being so compartmentalized and how it just does become a, like, how to get back from point A to point B kind of narrative. Like, I wondered what the Japanese version of this story that might have been more comfortable with a lot more blurring or just being in a complicated headspace would feel like. And I wouldn't say that any of the characters, like, I liked them all, but there weren't any that I was like, God, I would love to see this again, or I'd love to spend more time with that that person. I thought Phyllis Smith was pretty great as Sadness. She was a little bit of a standout to me, but
yeah, and I Richard Kind as Bing Bong, I loved.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I agree with what you're saying too. We're sort of the same and mixed on all these.
I know.
Although we have opposite things with Magic Mike.
And Jada Pinkett Smith is the wedge that's driving us apart right now. Yeah. And I'll just throw in there too the Joe Manganiello's scene in the gas station I didn't like at all.
And that's my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah, there we go. Wow. And Derek's already trying to help me understand life a little bit better and explain that that was a great scene. I am getting the re-education that I need.
I did find the sort of personality of XXL being so vastly removed from the first one a little jarring, but welcome. I was like, okay, if that's the way you want to go. Like, the first one was so cautionary about drugs.
Yeah.
And this one's like, drugs are fun.
Right. Totally.
Screw that life lesson from the first one. Anyway.
Or the, like, I mean, I think we've said this, that it is kind of refreshing that the movie doesn't feel the need to just, you say this in your review, just redo the things people like about the first one, but it is kind of funny how, like, in the first movie, we will gradually tease out the ways in which you'd never have guessed this is actually a critique of capitalism. And this one's like, I would give you healthcare, but I can't afford to. I'm self-employed, Rodrigo. Like, okay. Got it.
That's funny. I hadn't even thought of that connection.
But really, it's just about being more in touch with who you are as a person and stripping to a song you like. Okay. But... you know, I mean, it's more, whatever, I'm boiling it down for effect right now, but there is, and the movie has, like, integrity behind what it's trying to do, but it is a kind of an about face.
Yeah. So the, I think we have one more that we haven't talked about that we've both seen recently, Love and Mercy.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm so curious to hear your take on this, because I thought it was both very impressive and very not impressive
Okay.
And sometimes simultaneously.
Okay.
I loved Paul Dano, which is not something I normally say.
Check.
And I loved it. I think I probably mentioned this on the site briefly, but I thought the ways in which it was showing to you like artistic inspiration and madness and not equating them.
Yes.
And yet they were in the same person was pretty impressive because usually those lines get blurred.
Totally.
Like the stereotypes of, well, all artists are crazy, you know.
Right.
And I thought Elizabeth Banks was super.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So good.
But I was also at the same time as I thought she was super, and I was like, oh my God, this is clear evidence that people need to be challenging her because she plays the same thing in every movie except for this one.
Yep.
Including Magic Mike XXL. But at the same time, you learn nothing about her character. It's like the one of the most blank leading roles there is. So the fact that she's so impressive in it,
yeah,
is like doubly an achievement because like you learn nothing about that character. Like even when he, in the rare moment when he's not talking about himself, Brian Wilson,
yeah,
when he asks her about herself, she is evasive about it,
yeah,
and just says a tiny bit about a past relationship and that's it,
yeah.
So it, she was working basically. She was like creating it from.
She totally was. But I was kind of amazed. Yeah, I had a giggle about this because I couldn't work out whether the movie was implying that she had a kind of relationship with like the kind of floor manager at the Cadillac shop. There's the one kind of tall, burlier, slightly redheaded guy, you know, who they seem to have some personal understanding of each other.
Right.
And I thought I'd maybe just missed if they were exes or just besties or whatever they were. And then in the credits, he's billed as floor manager. It's like, okay, so then I guess he was nothing. But she's
good at teasing out things that aren't there, though.
She's totally good at that. And I feel like that kind of blankly written character often inspires the actor, and it's usually an actress, to kind of pointedly come up with a backstory or play something really specific to compensate for what's not on the page. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed how well she managed to evoke a character out of nothing, really kind of just through like mood and personality, like her goodness and her sympathy.
Yeah.
Weren't boring. And especially in a part that I just expected to see big crocodile Jennifer Connelly tears or Naomi Wattsing or
yeah.
Thing to try to, I will be the supportive spouse. Like, she did not seem caught up in that at all. She seemed caught up in Brian.
I think it's a leading role, and
yeah,
and it's going to be a supporting bid, obviously.
Right.
But here we are talking about structure again. Maybe this will become a screenwriting podcast.
Indeed.
But the bifurcated structure of this, or the parallel, it's weird because the first half the past tense half is solely focused on Brian. Like, the other characters barely register.
Yeah.
Other than as, like, support or... Other than, you know, supportive or antagonism, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then in the second half, it is really not... Like, it's about Brian, but he barely registers, and it's about her. Like, you're always with her. So you're only seeing him through the prism of her.
Yep.
Like, he doesn't really have scenes where he's by himself.
That's true.
Even though you'd think he would because of all the sort of drama that's inherent in the situation.
I hadn't thought of that at all. That's totally true.
And I thought that was very strange, and I couldn't tell if I thought it was wise or not.
Yeah.
But I was completely involved the whole time, which is more than usually happens to me for biopics.
Me too. Even I remember thinking during it that usually in that kind of braided story, the risk for I'm really interested in one of the stories and I spend the other one just wishing we could get back to the first one. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't always sure these two stories were speaking as fluently to each other as they possibly could, but I actually was caught up in both of them, which was surprising to me. Especially since a list of things I don't really like that much would include Paul Dano, John Cusack, The Beach Boys, and biopics, and kind of Elizabeth Banks. You know, like there was absolutely no rush on my part to go see this. But I was really engaged. I thought John Cusack was fantastic, but I gather maybe you didn't.
No, I thought he was tolerable, which is more than I often do. But I thought all the ways that Paul Dano was like hurdling typical obstacles for that type of part, John Cusack couldn't manage.
Huh.
Like the, you know, I'm a crazy person, you know, sort of the affectations and stuff.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was played way more obviously by Cusack than by Dano.
Huh.
And I don't know, maybe I'm just over him, I don't know. But I do want to ask you about the last portion of the movie, like after, spoiler alert, well, it's not really a spoiler, because obviously he escaped this person, since he's right. A famous person. But he escapes the, you know, the evil doctor who's drugging him, and so they settle down. And that last, like, 10 minutes or whatever, where you're seeing sort of, like, the happy ending, felt to me a little bit like this is an approved biopic, like too many people yes. who are too close to the situation trying to tell you the story. Like there was no, it felt way too polished and smoothed over. Like this can't have been this easy or this simple.
Yeah, I agree. And it felt like, it definitely was a story about extracting him that wasn't a story about what it's going to be like to live with him, like compounded by the problem of like we barely know her.
Right.
And, yeah, I agree with that. Although maybe since it only had half a movie to work with and I was so taken with their interactions with each other that even, like, I wouldn't say I didn't like Paul Giamatti in it, but you kind of know exactly what you're getting pretty yeah. early from him and that whole part of the plot.
Even before you sit down for the movie.
Yeah.
Right. One it might say.
You knew what you were getting from it. Yeah, totally. But, so, like, that turned out to be enough for that half of the movie to be about that. Just mm-hmm. how do we kind of get him out of here? Like, why does it keep almost happening and not happening? But you're totally right. As a full, it did feel completely endorsed. And then once you end it with footage of him and an original song by him, and it's pretty clear everybody's behind this.
Yeah, which I found that part. I mean, not necessarily off-putting, because I get that a lot of bios are that way.
Yeah,
a lot of them are based on autobiographies and things like that. But not off-putting, but sort of a letdown for how complicated the movie actually was.
Yes. And especially maybe, I mean, I hadn't thought of this before, but you're making me think about how the people from whom we would surely have heard something more complicated, like his brother who comes back in to help her, apparently, mm-hmm. or his ex-wife and the daughters, like, all keep being referenced or on the other end of a phone conversation that we only hear one side of. But nobody who would have difficult things to say is allowed to actually talk. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why did they sign him over to this guy in the first place?
You know? Exactly.
So it brought up all these questions that I felt they were being very cagey about.
Exactly.
And combined with the fact that we know so little about Melinda.
Yep.
Just got me, you know, thinking that they're really trying to make this far more simple than perhaps the director and the actors wanted it to be.
Yep. You're totally right.
So in that way, I think it's really hemmed in that way, and it could have been something great that it's not, but I did think it was a very involving movie.
Yeah, totally. Could not have said it better. For real, that's exactly right.
Jada Pinkett Smith is the wedge dissolving at this point. We're back together. Get out of here, Jada!
Reunited, and it feels so good. Yeah.
So I guess we're pretty much out of time, but we didn't say anything about Spy, which we were going to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But I loved it. I thought it was so funny.
The whole time?
Well, it, like most comedies, it's too long.
Yeah.
Like, I got a little tired of it by the end, but I thought Rose Byrne and Melissa McCarthy were both just so funny that I didn't care.
I mean, you know what the Heat is to me.
Yes.
And so I was so excited, but and for the first maybe half hour, I was really into it because I felt like that was when she was playing a really specific person in a
Yes.
really specific scenario, and it was really and the humor of that scenario was totally ingrained into it. But I just felt like steadily over the course of the 5 hours, like it just became so much more. I love that the movie is so generous and that their movies tend to be where it's just like, here are all my talented friends. You know, they're all gonna have something to do and
Right.
great. But it just felt kind of like bits and chaos and improv class. And then like once she kind of gets found out on the plane and then immediately turns into her Heat character,
Yeah.
of whom there has been no evidence at any point.
Yeah, that was a problem. Because I did think that her performance regressed. Like it was very, I loved that it was a whole new character for a while.
And I didn't think the movie was very skilled at knowing who we want to be more around and who we maybe don't. Like, I reacted pretty badly to Miranda Hart, for example. I would have been so happy for Allison Janney to show up on the scene if we have to get somebody from Langley out here in the field. Like, wrong choice. And Rose Byrne might be a Jada Pinkett for us. Like, I thought she was fine, but I saw it, you know, like 3 weeks into the run or something, and had heard so much and had seen photoshops on some people's blogs of her holding an Oscar, for example. And
For
I thought
example, theoretically,
that's totally
hypothetically.
hypothetical. Yeah, but maybe I dreamed it. But and I thought she was fine, but not anything more than that.
Huh, interesting.
I liked her first conversation, just about, you know, the sad Bulgarian clown that she reminds her of. You know, that first combo was great.
Yeah, so it sounds like you were into many parts of this for a brief spell, but everything wore out its welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, that's all the time we have.
What a note to go out on. Like a sad clown in the rain all of a sudden. Yeah.
But we had to like go through all these movies because we haven't talked in so long.
I know, and we still managed to do it in less than 45.
I know, it's
What?
amazing. We are amazing.
We hope you enjoyed this very special episode about structure.
Okay, and perhaps, well, now we've run through everything we've seen, so we'll have to hit the movie theaters again to have anything else to say next week.
Like Amy Schumer and Mission Impossible. Like, there's some stuff coming up that I'm psyched about.
Okay. All right, stay tuned.
Yay!